G'day again, my name is John Caruso and welcome to Conversations in Noosa. We've been through a lot the last few months, haven't we, with COVID-19, a global lockdown, and now a recession. First time in 29, 30 years. The question on everybody's lips, what's happening with real estate? What's happening with bricks and mortar in Noosa? I caught up with an expert, Adrian Reed from Reed & Co. My first question to Adrian was, how did you reinvent the business during the COVID-19 lockdown?
We immediately gravitated or pivoted, for lack of a better term.
Terrible,
isn't it? we moved our energy to buyers, because what we lacked in the marketplace when COVID hit was confidence dropped, and then the buying activity diminished. So sales volume fell away, and then buyers became the gold-plated, you know, parts of the watch, right? You know, like we really put our focus and our energy into making sure we understood who was in a position to buy, what their desired outcomes were, what their goals were, how quickly could they do it, and could we find them a solution, whether within it, you know, whether it was out the listings that we currently had or listings we could find. And I think that reinvigorated the team. It engaged the buyer base. It meant that we could transact. It meant that we could transact virtually. So we sold about 7 or 8 properties that were completely unseen, effectively, sold virtually. But they could only be sold to people that were engaged, ready to buy, needed housing solutions, you know, that we'd built great rapport with, and that had high levels of trust. So, you know, it went back to probably how real estate was done, you know. So it's not new. It's not different. It just meant that we had to move our focus back to the buyers, and that allowed us to, you know, to push through and still transact and still move forward and keep our volume up.
And what happened? Was it difficult finding those buyers?
Not really, because we've been speaking to them anyway. You know, the reality is the buyers, you know, for a listing that you might launch today, you may have started the conversation with the buyer for that property a year ago. You know, a year ago they weren't a buyer. They were discovering. They were learning. They were educating themselves. They were, you know. But you take them on that journey, and if you're part of that process the whole time, and you're connecting and reevaluating and assisting, then by the time they get to a purchase position, you know, you've obviously developed quite a reasonable relationship with that person, higher levels of trust, and that allows you then to transact when times are tougher. So you know, I think it kind of rewarded those agents or agencies that have a buyer advocacy as part of their overall, you know, strategy, and it just allowed us then to tap into our existing buyer base that we'd nurtured over time, that we could continue to transact with them through times of relatively high, you know, obviously high uncertainty. But it can be high uncertainty. But if you've sold in a particular place and you don't have a home to go to, they've got more uncertainty than you know, just a general punter that's trying to buy an investment property. But you know, so it just was a tweak, and then the actual function of selling the home changed completely. Open homes, you know, initially no open homes, no private inspections. It went to private inspections. We geared up quickly from a digital perspective. We changed the nature of the content that we provide online. So it went to much more realistic, much more, slightly less stylized, content around film and property photos. We pivoted really quickly to 360 aerial, so people could actually, you know, look around the sky, the street, the neighborhood, you know, its position, as opposed to like really fixed image sort of content. We were already doing video and film. So that was not new news, but we did tweak and change the format and the style to that. And then we also geared up our capability on how we delivered the content on a one-to-one basis. So, you know, that's all fine for you to have a, you know, film crew and a professional photographer and all of that sort of stuff when you create the content for the property. But when you took it now down to a one-to-one level, so it's a FaceTime now between you, you know, you're the buyer and I'm the seller, the agent. And so that we went to wide-angle lenses on our phones, better audio, you know, to improve the experience that people actually have. Because if you just grabbed your iPhone and raced around on a FaceTime, you know,
there's a level of skill involved in doing what you needed to do.
It just jiggles and the audio's not great. Yeah, the experience isn't good. Yeah. So we're all about the experience. You know, when it's in an open home, there's a candle, there's music. It's that just feels great. There's great, you know, the great engagement, smiles. You know, so people walk in and out of the open homes going, wow, that was a great experience. Yeah. You know,
you needed to transfer that to a digital
absolutely
aspect. Yeah, and did you have the people in-house to do that, or did you engage outside for AV stuff? For audio
like anything, mate. Like the reality is today, in today's day and age, you can go from zero knowledge to expert in 2 weeks. I don't care what it is, unless you're trying to be a neurosurgeon.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can't learn what you need to learn in 2 weeks in YouTube, mate, you don't deserve to be on this planet.
That's
you
what YouTube's do not, for, that's
mate,
right.
You don't deserve to be in business. So I think, you know, literally, you can reinvent yourself in 2 weeks, you know. Yeah. And you can, like I say, you can go from zero levels of knowledge to, you know, wheeling a gimbal and with a lens on your phone and great audio and, you know, film effectively, you know, very basic filmmaking in a very short period of time, you know, if you put your effort in the right place.
Let's talk about your numbers in terms of listings. What happened with those?
We brought the listings on that we had in our pipeline. You know, we didn't press pause necessarily. You know, so it's not like in March, you know, all of a sudden we're expecting 15 phone calls and, you know, and we're going to list 15 properties. Those conversations for listings in March have been happening for months. Everything that we had in our pipeline, we brought to market. You know, we did that with a view that if the market falls away, you know, you're best being in the market now. If it is going to fall, then today is the best value that you could potentially achieve for your property. So what have you got to lose? And then, you know, I think that there's the only fear for a seller potentially is it will take longer to sell.
And was that happening?
Definitely. Staying on? Oh, no question. Yeah, look, days on market extended. You know, you don't have the buyer energy in the marketplace. There's less buyers to deal with. And then there's obviously geographic boundaries that can't be crossed and you can't sell everything virtually. So days on market was always going to extend. But I think there was also a grace in the marketplace that if you launched during COVID, that the expectation wasn't that it was going to sell in 2 weeks, you know, that it could take longer. So, that, you know, you don't have the other stigma that's generally attached to being in the market for longer because it's unprecedented time. So, you know, I don't think there was too much challenge around that. So we just brought everything that we were planning to market. And we're working through all of that stock now, you know, and the reality is the value and the deals that we're closing on those are marginally less than what we would have seen at the absolute peak. And I'm talking sort of 3 or 4% off. And I think the energy's actually come back to the marketplace now. And you know, you only have to look at the Roy Morgan, you know, confidence results. And the last 9 weeks consecutively, it's improved. And, you know, mortgage rates stay low and there's no, the risk of default is low. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why we think the property market is actually should remain relatively stable. You know, whether it returns to growth or not, it's a different thing, but I think we're relatively stable.
Can you talk about moving out of, you know, the restrictions are easing, but now we find ourselves in another recession, the first recession in 29 years. In my head, in conversation at social gatherings, always said to people, you know what I think will happen is people will be so elated and excited to come out of lockdown that the news about the recession will kind of be secondary to that. Is that what I know we're only early days, but if you talk to people that lived through the last recession 29, 30 years ago, they tell you a lot of doom and gloom stories. Businesses were laying off people, people were losing their houses. What's your kind of vision, or how do you see the next, you know, the next 12 to 18 months when people realise, you know, the economic times are tough. We find ourselves in a recessionary period again. What's your footing for the business that you're in?
Uncharted territory. I think.
What about your dad though? Your dad's a successful agent from many years ago. He would have lived through the 1991 recession.
They're just different things, you know. Like the money's never been cheaper. You know, I think that's what's going to happen. You know, my take on how business owners have sort of are rebuilding their businesses will potentially, instead of four people, do it with three. You know, so I don't think that the problem, that the challenge we face is the re-employment won't get back to, you know, the capacity. The upside to that is businesses should become more profitable, more efficient. You know, it could spear off lots of other opportunities, you know, in the marketplace. the property market in particular is not immune to confidence drops, and we're seeing confidence return. So that's a lead indicator. That gives me great confidence, I guess, around property value. That the real challenge that we face is that one of the other lead indicators has been employment. You know, so if employment drops, then obviously mortgage pressure comes on, and mortgage default, you know, goes to, you know, price value drop. So that's sort of the sequence of events that we don't want to see. And I don't think, with what I'm seeing, that that's going to occur, because you know, the employment areas that are the hardest hit have actually got the lowest levels of home ownership, right? So if you think of hospitality and tourism as an example, the highest levels of employment that have dropped away and the highest levels of unemployment are people that don't have huge exposure to property ownership. You know, they rent. You know, it's lower dollar incomes. It's, you know, it's a different demographic. So if you think of that flow, that sort of the flow of events, or the chain as it is, we don't think there's going to be, you know, huge employment impact to the sectors that carry the greatest levels of home ownership. Therefore, you know, we think that they should be able to sustain either reduced income or marginally less, especially in an environment that, you know, for the foreseeable future, low interest rates. It's never been cheaper to own a home. Like if I had $1 million of debt on my own principal place of residence today, and I lost my job and I had to reinvent my life and figure out how I'm going to make $25,000 a year to retain the ownership of my home, there's a lot of things I could do to make 25 grand a year and hold on to my house. So my view is that, you know, mortgage stress, it'll appear, you know, people will manage their income to retain their principal place of residence. And, you know, I don't think that we'll see, you know, this wholesale sort of clearance of inventory. It's relatively, you know, not an illiquid, non-liquid, you know, it's difficult to liquidate your house. They're expensive to buy and buy in to stamp duty. They're actually relatively expensive to sell, and it takes time to liquidate your asset. So you're more likely to hang on to it and sort of see it through, you know, than you are to just, you know, release your principal place of residence. It actually costs more to go and rent somewhere than it would to hold your principal place of residence.
Often when you crunch the numbers and people that are contemplating. You're right, so cash is cheaper.
Cash is cheap.
These days.
Never been cheaper.
Than 30 years ago.
Great for business. Great for, you know, for families, you know, that are leveraged, you know. So it's and we didn't see that in the GFC. You know, so post-GFC it was 8.9%. Even at the lowest, when it started to dip away post-GFC in like 11, I think it got down to 5 or, you know, 5.5, you know. So mortgage stress appeared really quickly. You know, in post GFC, and there was no release. It was relentless, and it was expensive to hold property. But now it's you know, it's a totally different environment.
Do you do much in the commercial sector?
No, we observe it and obviously carry some ownership in it. But it's commercial is an interesting one. I think there's going to be sectors that are quite exposed. You know. And there's overarching trends in commercial that you know, that you'd want to be right across, so that you weren't, you know, acquiring, you know, oversupplied, you know, sections within the marketplace. It's a totally different conversation.
You guys don't dabble in commercial that much.
No, certainly interested in it, but I don't sell it.
I went down Hastings Street for the first time yesterday in about 2 or 3 months, and it really kind of was quite shocking to find so many businesses, you know, Le Monde and other businesses, all with their doors closed up,
still shut. Yeah.
Let's revisit a couple of issues, because I'm not sure. What's the wash-up in terms of the short-term holiday lease? What's the council's position now? I think we spoke about that.
We did a while ago. Look, at the moment, it's really a watch and see. So the town
what
plan...
What decision did they make on that?
I don't think it's actually got a final position. So the town plan got submitted to state, to my knowledge. State came back with a series of conditions. Those conditions, the current... The previous council weren't in a position and or made a decision not to accept those conditions that the state had been put in play. That meant that it went to election, and those conditions now need to be considered by the new council. Now the process for that, I'm not entirely sure the time frame around that. But they, the new council now get to either revisit the entire town plan.
And do you think they'll make a change? Is their thought process different to the previous council? We have a new mayor, we have some new councillors in there.
There's definitely an appetite to consider a slightly different approach, I guess. You know, certainly from the mayor has made, you know, some statements around that. You know, certainly has as an open view around the economic impact of that change. You know, Councillor Lawrenson and Finzel as well probably have a view that it could be revisited attacked in a different way. You know, there's still the balance of the council, you know, probably still, you know, share the existing view, which is that it was the right thing to do. So, you know, that's my political take on it and you know, reason of, you know, I don't know the answers to that. I think that it's a good opportunity to look at it with a fresh set of eyes. I think that as a small town that relies on, you know, sectors within this economy to perform, we need to consider it fully. And it could have significant impacts on top of COVID, on top of, you know, reduced international travel, on top of, you know, so we probably need to, it was a much more robust commercial situation that the last council went into that set of decisions with. So they could be a little more cavalier around it, and be a bit more ideological. Whereas now, you know, that situation has changed,
and I think they
probably need to kind of revisit that with a more sensitive commercial approach.
In another lifetime, when I was on the ABC and I talked to a bloke called Lloyd Edwards, who was the former chair of the REIQ, it was always important for him to stress. He said, "You know, all that news that you consume on the new, on the telly when they talk about real estate does this and real estate's doing that." That's always big city, Sydney and Melbourne stuff, and we're a very different community here. Do you agree, and how are we positioned moving forward?
Yeah, I completely agree. There's micro markets within markets, right? So even within Brisbane or within Sydney, there's micro markets within markets. So, I think Noosa's positioned beautifully. It's never been better, and no international travel means that Noosa comes on as as one of the prestige, you know, holiday destinations for the balance of the country. Like there will be a significant movement of high net wealth picking up some of the A grade stock within Noosa. There's no question that's already happening as we speak today. There will be some you know, standout results that come to light over the course of the next couple of months that will overshadow a lot of the negative press on the economy, because the high net wealth will pick off A-grade positions within Noosa and Sunshine Beach, Little Cove, Noosa Sound.
What do you mean by that? Those sales will still remain strong?
Well, yeah, absolutely. They'll want somebody to go on holiday, and they can't holiday in Milan, and they can't go to the south of France, sure, you know, okay. So they can't go to their super yacht in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
So they'll come to Noosa. Noosa will become Australia's little Monaco. I'm calling.
I understand totally where you're coming from. It's funny because I don't. I mean, you work in that area, and I probably don't see a lot of that stuff. But when you talk about super yachts and
it's real.
People hover. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know it's real. Right. I just don't mix in those circles. Actually, but you're probably right. Yeah. So if you can break it down into different sectors,
that's the prestige, like the super prestige.
That's right.
Like,
we're talking hyper the top prestige. Of the market.
Yeah. So that will happen. Yeah. I guarantee that you will see that play out. That's not, you know, that's not a myth. That's actually happening as we speak today. There'll be inspections in properties that are, you know, some of the finest properties on offer in the country, and a lot of that conversation is happening off market. There will be a greater freedom of movement of people now, because, you know, COVID's put pressure on businesses to reinvent themselves and allow movement of people, work from home. So we'll see great intellectual assets that have the flexibility now to choose where they live and work, which is great, because I think that there'll be some fabulous people that open up their eyes to, you know, where they need to live and work,
and I think they'd like to live and work too.
Yeah. and for the benefit of that, there'll be a movement away from densely populated urban areas, and I think it'll be the real talent that makes those moves, because I think it'll be the upper echelon of the business leaders that have the freedom to do that. So it'll be, you know, the CFO, the CEO, the, you know, the people that have the ability to have management teams continue to run in that organization, manage the culture, manage the day-to-day, and then they can sort of sit above from a strategic perspective, fly in and out, Zoom, you know, all those sort of things. But they can do that remotely. So they've discovered that. They've proven it. They already knew it. Like, everyone knew it, but it's been proven now that it can be done. So I think that's really, you know, that's going to liberate a lot of you know, great opportunity, liberate a lot of families, you know, to be able to make you know, a sea change, tree change that they never thought was possible.
Yep.
I think that we'll see a natural movement of people away from those urban, densely populated urban areas into more regional towns and, you know, and more desirable locations within the country. I think we'll see self-funded retirees, you know, that were always on a sea change, tree change movement, pull forward their plans. Because if you now can't do the next 7 years of international travel on, you know, through Europe, which was their plan, they'll pull forward their plan and go, you know what, we were thinking of a Noosa move, we were thinking of a, you know, a Caloundra move or whatever, that they'll pull that plan forward, exit their, you know, their place in Sydney or Melbourne and try and take up position here. So I think we'll see positive migration, both in younger, financially capable, you know, great thinkers, business leaders. I think that we'll see, you know, the pull forward of plans for self-funded retirees and, you know, away from urban areas into desirable locations.
Can I ask you about retirees and any observation you've made, correlation between stock market volatility and the price of bricks and mortar?
Not really. That, like, they're not causal.
Like, one doesn't flee one to invest in another.
Not really. You know, like, they generally they have a correlation. So sometimes there's you know, as the stock market declines, the property market has traditionally declined with it. But they've not been causal effects. They've just correlated.
Yeah.
There's been other causal effects outside of that decline that have made those two markets move at the same time. So the causal effect, as an example, on the stock market crash was obviously, you know, COVID, confidence, business results. You know, and the causal effect for property impacts might be unemployment and confidence, right? So those causal effects are,
yeah,
you know, that impact those two markets, but they impact it in a different way. You know, property market has a buffer because, you know, interest rates are so low. Therefore, cost of holding means that maybe we hold. You know, and the reality is the numbers, the latest released numbers from CoreLogic for May are that I was 0.3 up, I think, versus a year ago for the you know, capital city markets. You know, I think Sydney and Melbourne were slightly up and Brisbane slightly down. So, you know, there hasn't been any material impact on value. So, but yet the stock market, obviously, you know, 20-30% down and climbing back. You know, you only have to look at the US at the moment, and it's you know, it's flying and it's defying logic. You know, I watch from afar, but I certainly don't think the US is out of the woods yet. You know, they've got plenty of challenges ahead of them, but yet their stock market seems to be, you know,
they're head above water with all those five big tech companies, including Incredible. Selling Cola. I mean, we've got old business here, don't we? We've got banks and we've got resources.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Google, Alphabet,
yeah,
Amazon, it's really dragging those up.
Yep.
How are you guys positioned now for the next, say, 18 months?
You know, for us, it's always about, you know, if there will be less volume in the marketplace, then, you know, for us to maintain, you know, our financial position, then we grow our market share, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. I think that we're working. You know, we'll be working into a very tight listing environment. Like list stock will be historically tight
to get listings. Yeah.
I think there will be a movement for vendors to look for sellers to look for agencies and agents that show agility, that have demonstrated their ability to reinvent themselves, you know, through the COVID period, and then to secure results and keep days on market short and basically redefine the way that they go to market. And that's different to what happened in the last round. So in post GFC, there was a gravitational pull to bigger brands. So that might've been to the existing established older, you know, older world agents and agencies, because there was higher levels of trust. the truth is now it's a little bit different. You know, they're actually gravitational pull to those that have got great digital, footprints, that have got the ability to sell in, in tougher environments, that have they've demonstrated agility, during the COVID period, that can master the new art, I guess, of selling property in a different environment, and that sort of positions us quite nicely, because we've been able to do that and demonstrate that quite clearly to the marketplace, and that's an exciting time for us as a young irreverent challenging agency in the marketplace.
Good for your brand too, early adopters of that digital technology. Oh, and
love it.
The virtual tours and all that kind of stuff.
For anyone listening that's interested in the Noosa property market, start picking away at some of the fundamentals, and I think you rebuild your confidence in this particular micro market really quickly. Its desirability, its livability, it's the underlying economic factors that will continue to make Noosa a long-term bet. The likelihood is an acquisition tomorrow will cost you more than an acquisition today, and that's quite typical for property generally. But I think that we'll probably see a very strong period for the Noosa property market over the course of the next 4 or 5 years.
Last time I think you mentioned Tewantin as a suburb to watch.
Yeah, what's interesting is the interesting thing I found out of this COVID period is the deals that we've done, a lot of the virtual deals that we've done have been between $800 and $1.5 million. And they're generally younger buyer demographic, they're families that need homes, they're things like, and that's one of the markets that, that Noosaville Tewantin market has fired, one of our agents, Mark Hodgkinson, who does a really great job, old Tewantin, Tewantin Outlook, he's had his best ever month in May, ever. In his real estate career of sort of 5 years, so he's sort of the COVID king. But I think that's one of those markets that has really sort of accelerated, and he's been able to continue to kind of build the momentum and list and sell in short periods of time and pivot really quickly and take the properties to market in a different way and sort of outpace his competitors in that space. And I don't think that we've seen any dip in Tewantin at all. In fact, I think that it's probably stable to growth still. I love it. That's a great little pocket.
Adrian Reed from Reed & Co. is my guest today in Conversations in Noosa. If you liked what you heard, rate and review the podcast, share it about on your social media networks. Until next time, thanks for listening.